The end is coming for Jesus, and we find ourselves on this freight train speeding towards Good Friday, towards the sham trial, the torture, and the death of Jesus. The drumbeat is picking up pace. Stay awake. The words are repeated over and over again. Stay awake, Jesus to his disciples in the parable, as they fall asleep in the garden, overcome by exhaustion. Stay awake. We're picking up a story in the middle of this chaotic and frightening series of images and teachings. But we get this interesting turn. Not one that immediately induces fear, but one that starts off with celebration. It's about a wedding, something hopeful, life-giving. It's a story about a party. The hearers of Matthew would know this scene well. It's been played out hundreds of times in their own community. But what if the groom is late? This is a wrench thrown into the plans, and sitting outside waiting for things to get going, the hours stretch on into the weary night, and eventually, one by one, the bridesmaids slump to the floor, asleep. We know from the beginning of Jesus' parable some other information about these waiting women. Five are wise and five are foolish. It's surprising to learn this because we find them all here asleep. They are asleep in the middle of multiple exhortations saying, stay awake. When the groom finally shows up, some of the young women have this oil for their lamps, and the others have run out as the night has worn on. So the five unwise women ask their friends for help. The wise women are indeed good at planning ahead, but they're also kind of jerks because they tell their friends, no way. They tell them to go to the market to get some oil, and the wise ones don't want to run out. So off they go. There are no 24-hour convenience stores carrying lamp oil that I've read about in ancient Judea. So it's a bit unclear what these women expected to happen this far after sunset. And while they're aimlessly wandering around the streets, the groom shows up and the party starts. And by the time the women return, they're a distant memory. Who is this? Sorry, I don't know anyone by that name, says the groom behind the door. So Jesus ends with these words. Keep awake, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. So when earlier generations of Christians heard this story, they actually thought it had something to do with us in the church, about our life together. And we know this because church artists would adorn cathedrals with renderings of this parable. You can see it here at the bottom on this lintel from a French church of St. Peter and Paul from the 13th century. These are visual aids for people who are entering the church building. And on the left, you see the wise women. They're dressed like nuns, they're standing in line, focused, expectant, ready to process into the worship service. And on the other side, chatting it up, oblivious to their surroundings, dressed in these beautiful, expensive clothes, are the unwise women. We also see this picture in the German cathedral of Magdeburg, and we get a slightly different take. Here are the wise women. They are joyful and excited. They're laughing. And often in Christian art, laughing is a way to mock the destructive powers which we now are rendered harmless because of Jesus. These young women hold up their lamps, lighting the way. Opposite them are these five women who look almost identical, actually, to the first five, but with a striking difference. They're weeping and crying and kneeling in this emotional upheaval. These are the kinds of people who show up to church every week. And I think these ancient cathedrals are onto something when they read the story not just about the future, but the way we work out our relationships to one another coming into church. I'm also wary that these artists cover up some of the ambiguities of this story for the sake of the clarity of their art projects, because it's not quite as straightforward as these artists make it seem. In spite of being told over and over again not to fall asleep, Everyone in this story falls asleep. No one has done the thing Jesus, a few sentences before, has told people to do. So right off the bat, we recognize that we're not talking about perfect people. The idea that some are righteous and some are unrighteous, lost sinners, we're immediately challenged on this reading. And when the groom shows up, we get this next move. We find that the five of the waiting women live up to their reputation. They're prudent, attentive to their own interests. In another place in Matthew, we see the same word used to describe people who are wise as serpents. Like a man who built his house on a rock instead of sand, like a good business investment. But the other young women, the foolish women, they haven't actually done anything wrong. When we see Jesus contrasting righteous and unrighteous people, it's almost always because we see them actively working to hurt others. They put heavy loads on people's backs. They turn children away. They make faith hard, full of burdens for others. There's nothing like this in the story. Instead, these foolish young women are called foolish because they didn't anticipate something wholly unexpected, that a groom would show up 3 hours late to his own wedding. If these young women are foolish, they certainly aren't morally reprobate, and even their foolishness is mild. If I was in Matthew's community hearing this parable, I'd be feeling a little squirmy right about now. I mean, I feel anxious about reading this parable today. I certainly do not identify with the wise women who have planned for this ridiculous, unheard-of contingency. Who among us expects someone to show up 3 hours late for a wedding? Have you brought a sleeping bag and a pair of pajamas and an extra dinner to the weddings that you attend just in case the reception starts, you know, in the middle of the night? If I identify with anyone in this parable, it is the foolish bridesmaids. And I also know what I need in those moments. I need the grace of people who have managed to hold it together, who have prepared in ways that I haven't, who have imagined contingencies that I never could. I fully admit my foolishness, and I hope that I'm here in a community where when I need a little extra oil, maybe you'll give some to me. That's not what happens. Instead, the shrewd, self-protective bridesmaids tell the young women to get lost. You're on your own. Go wander around in the dark. And I wonder what this says about them, to suggest that single women wander around looking for oil in the middle of the night. Can you sense both the danger and the fruitlessness of this suggestion? The preacher Fred Craddock used to say that all of Jesus' parables fell into one of two categories. The first are justice parables, where someone reaps what they've sown. The other parables are grace, where we discover the surprising mercy of God. We need both because we know there's no mercy without justice and there's no justice without mercy. It's not easy for me to see a clear line of justice here, where hurt and destruction of the weak are vindicated by God. But then where might grace be in this story? Perhaps it's here in the final words that we imagine Jesus saying back to those gathered, squirming before this story, "Stay awake." The writer of this parable seems to think that something would have changed if the women had stayed awake instead of falling asleep. What would have been different? I wonder if they would have discovered in those long hours that some of them didn't have enough oil and the time was growing long. Maybe then they would have had time to correct the problem, to return home or buy some oil when it was safe and stores were still open. Perhaps the wise ones would have told the unwise to get their act together, to warn them that time was getting away and they needed to get a move on to make this thing right. I'm not sure what would have happened if they stayed awake, but I suspect that Jesus wants us to hear that the ending would have been different. And if we're not willing to do that, to do the work of telling each other the truth of our lives, of figuring out how to stand in solidarity, some of us are going to be left out in the cold. So what might this look like, this truth-telling to one another, as we stay awake in these days? The section of the parables and teachings ends just a few verses later when we hear these words. Would you come up and read them, Debbie?
Come, that you are blessed by my Father. Inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me.
And do you know what the response is from people who hear this? Did you read that too, Debbie?
Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?
Do you know the response? When you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. When you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. To recognize Jesus is to see Jesus in the oppressed. Jesus tells them it's more than simply not doing violence to your neighbor. It's more than keeping your head down, looking out for yourself, staying out of trouble, getting your beliefs right, hanging on for one more day until Jesus shows up. It isn't enough to say, I had no idea what was going on. It's not an excuse to say, we didn't know where to find Jesus, because we have each other. And it's our job to tell each other the truth about how much oil we have. The parable of the 10 young women tells us that we've got to be responsible for one another right now. Stay awake can be translated in another way. Be vigilant. We need each other, and we need this time to figure out how to do our life together. All of you who call yourselves followers of Jesus, now is the time. Stop getting distracted. One of the ironies is that a popular reading of this parable produces the sleep induction we're warned about. In that reading, it's all personal. It's about getting head knowledge right. Do you have the right set of beliefs? Are you holding fast to those beliefs no matter what until Jesus shows up and whisk you out of here? That's not what it's like in Matthew, where belief happens in the body. It happens when you feed the hungry and visit the incarcerated. And if you live a life woefully oblivious to your neighbor's suffering, that's bad news. But what this parable tells us is that we need to be the ones who form a way of life where we make sure we're actually caring for and attentive to our most vulnerable neighbors. We do this not because we're afraid, but because we want to meet Jesus. We want to actually know Jesus in our sick neighbor, in our housing insecure neighbor, in our undocumented neighbor. And all of us are in the habit of falling asleep on this job. The reign of God, it's not in the future. It's happening right now. And if you are for me, and I am for you, we'll stay awake and tell each other who it is we need to be, what it means to find Jesus in the dispossessed, how to get those lamps filled up. Stay awake. You do not know the hour or the day. Amen.